Enter the world of Maltopia. Maltopia explores our modern-day world in the aftermath of the Great Darkness of 1999, a year-long global amnesia that not all survived. The post-darkness world is a horrific version of its former self, where madness spreads like plague, nightmares come alive, and the very landscape lay twisted by the effects of unknown forces. Some search for loved ones, some search for sanity, and still others revel in the nightmare the world has become. Maltopia, a new world of horror podcast, is a diverse collection of original horror and dark fiction, featuring interconnected standalone stories, limited series, and long-form serials spanning subgenres from dark fantasy and dark sci-fi to weird fiction and beyond, all set within the ever-expanding literary world of Maltopia. Maltopia, a new world of horror, on your favorite podcast platforms. This is 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade, a retrospective podcast brought to you by UtilityMuffinLabs.com. Welcome to the Dark Ages.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Bob.
And today we're going to be doing a deep dive review, what have you, going over Road of the Beast, which is a source book that details this particular road. So before we get into that, Bob, I put out a call today just to see if anybody had any questions, any interesting questions to ask us. And as you can see, I've shared it with you. But I'm going to go ahead and read it now. And this is from our Discord. And the listener's name is Gogo Bacala on our Discord. And they ask, former Canebro here, is there a moment where you both realized that getting Potence 5 and Protean Claws was not the be-all, end-all victory when playing Vampire? Which is a deeper question, I think.
It's a deep question, not the end-all, be-all of Vampire. First off, Potence 5 is way too much. and Protean Claws is an interesting choice, though not the best. True Canebrowage comes from knowing the best advantage as written to always be successful. And there is a unique combo that I have discovered that is unbeatable, by the way. It's completely unbeatable, and it requires much thinking and Canebrowage, but it is not Smash Nose Potence 5 Protean. Mm-hmm. For instance, this doesn't describe what happens if you, what if you botch the roll?
Right.
What if you miss? Right? This is heads up we're talking. You can get rolled, right? Because if you put Potence 5 and Protean Claws, you definitely can't take a hit. You glass cannon it right through it, right? So I know what you're thinking. Some of you out there would say, well, Fortitude doesn't help. Certain person likes to always tell me that. They're wrong, right? Fortitude helps you survive the combat and flee. Why? Potence 5 Madman jumps out, and he's like, ah, 5-ag at least, right? If you did it right, activated it. Cool. I would like at least a dot or three to attempt to reduce that down so I can run away.
Yeah.
That's the point. But what's better than that? Well, off the top of my head, we could say obfuscate level 4. Right? We could say that I jump out ambush, try to stake you. Oh, wait, my stake didn't work. I disappeared. I wasn't there at all. And what am I doing? Pulling out stake number 2.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's another great combo, yeah. Right? But even that is beatable because you sit there and go, what if I have eye aspects? Well, really, it never mattered because while you're putting all those dots in aspects, okay, you could see me. And I'm walking up with a stake thinking I'm hidden.
Right.
And you're like, no, he's right there. Odds are I could still stab you.
Yeah, that's
right.
True.
You put all your points to get stabbed. And I mean, it's a checks and balance. So there is there. But there are many ways to work around it. Without riffing further, yeah, I knew early on in playing this game that Canebro was never my appeal. No. In truth, playing Vampire was my desire to be one. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a vampire, to feel that villainy, to feel that immortality even in my mind. Take it from my brain and try it out and see what it would be like and see the feels and the machinations and the... Let's admit it. We all play this game to play in our ego and with it, to watch, to mold it, to become something else, to act that out. And if you're me, just to divorce yourself from it. Like, yeah. I enjoy it, but keep it separate.
I think that the concept of the Canebro, for me, one, I never really knew of that term until, like, very recently when we started doing, like, we had our own little term for it, and, you know, it was, like, power gamer or whatever. But when I started playing this game, I was a teenager, and I played a tabletop with a few people, and it was just a very brief exposure. But the primary source of my experience with this game came from LARP. And LARP at the time when I started playing, and even to some degree today, was very competitive. And being a Canebro wasn't like a thing that I did because I wanted to win. It started just as a defense mechanism because I enjoyed the game immensely. I knew what the game was about, and I wanted to play in that game. But at the time when I started, if you didn't have a badass character that knew how to use all your powers, you were going to get smoked. And what happened to me was that over and over again, knowing the rules, but making a well-developed character did me no good. So I just constantly got killed or constantly got smoked or whatever. I couldn't defend my role play. So it became a necessity. I had to build that powerful character.
What's fascinating is you're talking about a bullying element,
yeah,
that exists in LARP that an organization still is around that does that same methodology is what, mm-hmm, I mean, and they let it go. Why? Because people want to be powerful, and if you let them be powerful, they will always abuse it over another. But they're not playing Vampire.
Right.
You're playing a game where you have a 4-year character, a 5-year character, who every time he shows up gets to lord it over some poor schlup who's not as powerful as you, which means you're playing yourself. I will take that Pepsi Challenge dollars of donuts, and why I don't participate in those games is because until you get rid of how badass your character is, you're not playing the game.
Yeah.
You're not.
I think after a couple of years, when I finally realized that you could just role play in such a way that would give you the power of your character, then it became a non-issue. Basically, once I became a veteran of the game and I really just stopped caring about like the power level of a character and just focused on my personal role play, that's when I was like, I'm just going to make a character. And if you know, while you're devising ways to murder me, I'm going to go make relationships and I'm going to, you know, influence folks. And I'm going to do all this role play stuff to where I don't have to worry about just making a ridiculous character. Now, having said that, I still occasionally like the concept of making a character who is just a bull in a china shop combat monster. I think there's a time and a place for it. There's no reason to just say, no, I'm not going to do that. Sometimes you want to play the dumb door guard who got embraced that can break necks.
And I'm far too cool and serious to try to do that. I'm serious in my own mind. I'll admit that. That's an ego thing, and I'll admit that. I can't play something minuscule or one pigeonholed, one and done. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. So when I joke about I've been a Canebro, it's that I've always known about it, and I get where people's fun is at, and I've story told people through it. I've never liked it, and I'll tell you why. The first feeding scene, you ask the point. As I keep reading this question, it's literally, yeah, the point when you knew it wasn't to be a Canebro. It was when I decided to play up playing a Bruja, and I had frenzied, and I'd killed someone, and I couldn't figure out who it was, and I'm outside this club, and I'm covered in blood. And the storyteller didn't mean to do it, but he described this girl crying in the parking lot. And she was looking for someone and couldn't. She was just defeated, and she was sitting there. I looked back, and I had asked the storyteller if that guy had a wedding ring.
Mm-hmm.
And the storyteller literally did any as he would. Yeah, he did. Now, I read the storyteller well, knew immediately he had made that up.
Right,
but the train had already left for Bob. I already was in the moment.
Right.
And I sat there and said, I almost shit. You know, it's like I felt terrible. And so, you know, I didn't pick him up and take him over there. I licked the wound. I put this guy to the side. And I immediately took out his wallet, saw who he was. And I had Obfuscate level 3.
Mm-hmm.
Right, with this Brewer. That's the nature of this game was that you end up having. And also, I had Diabolized an Elder.
Right.
And that's not relevant. What it is a series of events, and I took advantage in a mentality of a game that kind of believed in Canebroage a lot. Like you said, a bullying era. But where the roleplay came from was when I walked over and described me walking over, and everybody was like, what's he doing? And I started walking everybody through it. I said, I feel this guy, this Bruja I'm playing. this would have broke him. And I'll tell you why. He has a wedding ring. There she is crying. And she's destroyed. She can't find him. How does she know that I killed this guy? Think about it. How does she know?
Mm-hmm.
She has to feel an immense loss. And the ST's like, and what are you doing? And I went over there and I asked her, said, excuse me. And I looked like the guy over there. Mm-hmm. I didn't say it was him. I let her see it. And she rushed to me and she grabbed me and she was hanging on to me for dear life. I thought I lost you. And I pulled her head back and dropped Obfuscate and told her, you did lose him. And I'm the one who killed him. And my fangs run up and blood's down my face. And she was like, you monster, you horrible monster. And that's what the ST said. And I picked her up and I held her. And I told her, don't worry, you won't be alone. And then I killed her. And then I fed from her until she died. And I went to the back and I wrapped him up. And I called the sheriff and I sat in my car. And the sheriff got there. And the sheriff held out a stake and he handed it to me. And so I staked the sheriff with it. And so what I did was I drove us all to the prince.
Right.
And I walked in and I was like, I want you to know your court's a sham. What we are is wrong. And we should all die. And he was like, why? Just kill me and get it over with. And someone used telepathy and 15 people jumped up to use all these powers to figure out what happened. Yeah. And it took him an hour to do that nonsense. And the storyteller sat there and I know it was in his head. How do I take something this awesome?
Right.
This awesome right here. This is a lesson to my whole game to show them that's vampire. That's vampire.
Right.
That's the manners.
That's a very, I find that very compelling. But this is a really good question because it allows us to talk about this road, which in a lot of ways people have seen as kind of like the excuse to Cain bro it up. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I do. I absolutely do. To get to it,
mm-hmm.
Cause it's still consider this an extended question mixed with the path talk here.
Mm-hmm.
Road of the Beast very much is a call to the beast in every vampire. And the misnomer, the mistake people make is that, well, I'm on a path and we don't believe in a beast. Yes, you do.
Right.
Yes, you do. It's an irrefutable fact. Every vampire born feels their beast calling to get out. And the Road of the Beast says, let it out. But you do not let it own you.
Right.
Right? It even states that. Right? Mm-hmm. And I know what you're thinking. What? That doesn't make any sense. It makes perfect sense. You don't want to follow the wassail.
Right.
You don't want to be this. And what a wassail is when a vampire lets go of all humanity. Right. And they're clinging to whatever they were and embraces becoming this thing.
Yeah.
And that's it. And once you do that, you're to be put down.
And I think that one of the best ways for people that are really stuck in that Cain bro mentality is for you to look at the roads, the paths of enlightenment, the concept of humanity, of a philosophy of a driving urge, which is your beast, you know, something deep and dark and powerful and feral that's inside of you. When you as a player start to explore that, that's the point where I think you'll start to go, oh, it's not just about, it's not about getting those disciplines. It's not about, you know, how do I kill everything that comes in my way? There's more to the game than just kicking shits, you know, kicking doors in.
I think it's a question of passion versus immediate gratification.
Yeah.
Right? That's what it is. And how do those two even compete in the same arena? Well, you could have the passion to want and to have and to enjoy and to pursue something with your emotions in the fore and raw, right? A raw nerve, unbidden.
Mm-hmm.
And not obtain something yet, but in that pursuit, it's fun. It's fun to feel, it's fun to pursue it, and it's fun to know that one day you'll have it.
Right.
Or you'll be dead. Then there's immediate gratification. Screw all that. Just give me the dot. Give me my Klingon warblade to run and seize and attack people with. And that's, you could do that. Here's the catch 22 though. For everyone listening, and I really want to state this, this is why fundamentally the Sabbat falls apart in almost every game unanimously. It's because when you can't capture the fact that that's a passionate sect in right. pursuit of absolute belief of whatever that is, both politically and spiritually, and that they do wholeheartedly believe in getting off humanity and grasping another path as soon as they can, right? That's key because they mm-hmm. are vampires. If you can't roleplay that, grasp that, get the rituals it takes to get there, go through that, the rituals are there to bind you,
mm-hmm.
not just in blood, but the more rituals have to happen to show you loyalty, respect, to guide you through what is going to be a very hard process to pursue an agenda that only a war machine could have. And well, war machine meets vampire church, I guess. And most people go, it's too hard. Amnesty of your Camarilla politics. Well, why? What is the draw to people who play the Camarilla to try Sabbat? You are tired of the rules and stepping on traditions and believing there aren't any over there. The grass is greener.
Right.
And then when you get over there and realize, oh man, now I have to defend. I actually have to defend what I say I'm doing. Because if I'm not strong enough, then I'm supposed to shut up and get in line. And if I don't shut up and get in line to gain strength, then they're gonna call me.
Yeah, I've always thought, and I've probably said it a couple of times in this podcast or Nerd Words or whatever, but I've always thought that when you play Sabbat, you're really playing kind of like a more complex and more advanced version of Vampire the Masquerade. Not to say that the Camarilla is simple, because it's certainly very complicated, and it certainly has a lot to offer folks that are looking for that politics, looking for, you know, humanity, but it just has a different flavor. And it is where I feel like the Camarilla tends to be a melting pot of clans, right? Every, you know, all the clans kind of get together and they offer something. The Sabbat is that, and it's a melting pot of beliefs, all trying to move forward towards one sort of agreed upon concept.
It is. And mm-hmm. to add to that, like, the whole point of the Camarilla is that they're monsters, 1,000%.
Right.
Pretending to be human.
Right.
And people forget that. And the humans, because we are humans playing the game. That's why the Camarilla is so popular. Because we believe, okay, it's us, but then we have this vampire stuff and we got some rules. All right. And that's why it's training wheels for Vampire the Masquerade. The Sabbat is there is no pretense, and you're thrown to the wolves, and you have to be a wolf to run with the wolves. And that's very hard for people to wrap their head around. And you have to be a very patient ST and student-prepared, mind-open players to sort of get that move through. Now, all that said, Road of the Beast literally highlights all of this by ignoring any political thought or ideal.
Right.
And it says, and I love it, even in its opening story, talks about how the Ferals, as their moniker is, they're trying to get back someone that was stolen from them, right? Tremere Chantry, X, Y, and Z confiscated one of their own who had allegedly betrayed them, and they're interrogating him to learn about it. Well, that one had become an adherent of the Road of the Beast, and the Ferals want him back.
Right.
To boot, there's an important Feral who's a Grey Hunter, it's one of the derivatives of the Road, decided that he was going to start writing down his experiences with the same Road, but he's wise enough to know what would not be accepted by other Ferals. So there's stuff that hold gaps that aren't written down. And so they did this in the outline of the book to show you that, oh, okay, so the Ferals absolutely abhor writing anything down. However, because we need a book and we need to tell you what it is, we're telling you the perspective of it throughout the book in that fashion.
But also to give you kind of a different perspective. One thing that this taught me, because just full admission here, I had never read these Dark Ages books. That's not to say that I've never used them, but when I would play Dark Ages, and I've played Dark Ages a few times, a couple games ran by Bob, some other games, I would do what most people did. I'd go, what pertains to me? Oh, there's a couple of different paths I can pick. There's some like cool disciplines, some, you know, merits, flaws, whatever. I'll go to that stuff, pick what I want, and move on, right? And to be totally fair, I now understand the disservice that I've done. Because having read through this book and seeing the path through the eyes of the adherents and hearing their stories and reading their tales, it's really opened up to me my understanding of not just the Road, but also the modern day paths and where those originated from. And that is such a value. To get back a little background, Bob and I, what was it, like 2 years ago, we did sort of a deep dive into the different paths of enlightenment in the modern era. And when we started doing that, Bob was very adamant, and you can, you know, further extrapolate if you want, but Bob was very adamant, like, we can't talk about these paths without knowing and understanding the roads that they originated from.
Right.
And I was like, nah, man, you can understand them just fine just by reading the stuff that's in the modern times. And I'm not going to say that that's incorrect. However, you're doing yourself a disservice. That much I can tell you, having read through this book and how much it really opened my eyes and illuminated to me what this road is all about. I think even if you're not playing Dark Ages, you should read these road books. That's just something I wanted to get off my chest right off.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you, because when you read these road books, you understand that it comes from a time when a vampire's embrace and it's a sire's duty to teach them they are not human.
Right.
Right. Do you understand that? I need you guys to understand it and come with me on it. This is not the Camarilla propaganda machine, right? Right. This is the War of Princes era, where we've been through the Long Night, where there was no, I mean, there was a law, but it was a law as old as Nod, right? So it really didn't pertain to helping the mortals at all. But now we're in bed with mortals. We are working with mortals. And that doesn't even mean that they absolutely rule our world. But it does mean we're now taking ownership and responsibility for what we have going on. But first amongst it is to understand that when you get embraced, I will now remove who you were. Your humanity must be stripped from you. And maybe in that era, and depending on your sire, they would go as far as to kill your family or to pay them off as if you're dead to never remember you. Or maybe that era, you just didn't. There were so many ways to die that when you didn't come home for three nights in a row, there was no stew left for you in the homestead, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the mentality. But once the sire does that, they are not done with you, right? There are enough people. They talk about this a lot throughout these books in the Dark Ages here about how, well, there's ferals in the wild. There are ferals in Transylvania. There are broods of Nosferatu that are just, you know, running rampant, so on and so forth. Well, why that is because nobody pulled them aside and took the time to take responsibility for what they were making and who they were making. And when you take that into consideration, you're like, well, how do you do that? Right? If you were just the player and we told you that, well, how do I get you off humanity? What is that about? Well, welcome to the roads.
Mm-hmm.
And the roads broaden your mind into what you're playing, or one of the many ways you can play what you're going through, but it's distinctly not human.
Right.
That's the long and short of it. So if it's following that methodology, you can't just jump to the modern, take where the end road, where what the roads become, right, and they just call them paths, leave it at that, and then give it a big thumbs up and hope that works out.
Right.
Because you need to be able to see that, okay, Jack, listen, there was a road of kings.
Right.
Before your honorable accord.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But understand the road of kings was vastly more important in a lot of ways, right? Honorable accord is good and it's great, great you're on it. But when you understand that it comes from road of kings, even if you're just a modern player, you go, there's a lot that's not in here, but I see what they kept. Man, what it became isn't what it was, yeah. But okay, so it's salvageable. And the answer is yes.
Right.
Right? Because the Camarilla has won. Right? That's, you gotta understand. It does a good job of spanning the ages in that. And that as the war went on, despite who lives and dies and who kills and who doesn't, influence and control is what wins the jihad.
Yeah.
And because of it, when the Camarilla says humanity is what we are, so stop trying.
Right.
And they're enforcing it. You're watching the Sabbat's only hope to cling together, Anarchs too, for those who still are on those roads too, or are trying to. Your lessons don't matter as much when you're being hunted and systematically being wiped out.
Right.
And until you find a way to change that, that's just sort of the lot you're in. And that's how that material kind of comes across.
One of the things I really love about the roads in the Dark Ages, and all of them have this, is they talk more about that transition and the moment of truth. And that's one thing that I really wish that they had included in sort of the writing and the conceptualization of the paths, because I think it's really an important thing to have that moment of like, oh, the aha moment where you become more than just a sort of a stumbling block on that path, where you go, oh, I get it now. Here's that moment of truth.
They do describe it, and it's called the Suspire. That's what they refer it to. I mean, I don't know if that term sticks out in your head, but we did review the Suspire. They do have it in the modern with the paths, but something the roads do better is that it's in one book.
Right.
Do you get how that is? It's two different books to get that. There is a path book where it talks about having these moments, but it doesn't get really defined until you get into the, can't remember the title of the book. So one, it goes a deep dive on the whites. Where you finally see what those are.
I don't remember. Was that Chaining the Beast? I feel like, I don't know if that was Chaining the Beast. No.
Sins of the Blood. That's what it was. Sins of the Blood. And in Sins of the Blood, they talk about the Suspire from the Elder, who is in a boat, talks about him not hitting Golconda.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a player going, wait a minute, but that was talking about Golconda. No. What you're doing, Golconda, humanity, path, road, all philosophies.
Right.
Every one of them are just philosophies. Take the philosophy away and all you are is the beast. Your nerves and instinct, that's it. The philosophies make you who you are. And so when you look at that, okay. So if I can have a Suspire and be on Golconda, okay. Mm-hmm. The Suspire, as they define it, is this moment where they understood everything and were accepted and warmth and whatever. However, when you look at these other paths and you're looking at them trying to hammer home what these moments are, mm-hmm. for them to realize when it is that they increase, it's that too. But the Rhodes do something different, and which is what you're talking about as well. They don't just say, well, okay, you're on a road now, walk it. It's, you learned a little bit.
Right.
And so you're like a neophyte.
Right, exactly.
You're on the road, you're a neophyte. And then one day, you realize more and you're that. But I challenge it, because you don't need it. That's the one thing I'm going to tell you. Like, if you need someone to tell you that 1 through 3 means you're this, 3 through 6 means you're that, and the rest means you're an advancing here, well, you're kind of missing the point. I guess you need it, and that's fine, and it's their fault for putting a numeric to it. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's a philosophy. Mm-hmm. The more you will always be learning on that path, you will never not. Just because I adhere to a level 10 in a philosophy doesn't make me Cain.
Right. 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 No, it doesn't. It doesn't. No, but I just think it's a good thing for players to sort of grab onto, as well as, you know, a focus point for the development of their character. I just think it's a cool idea. I just wish it's something that they had carried over. You know, I can see the value in it, but...
No. It's not me decrying. I did decry it because, to me, it's easier mm-hmm. to understand when you read it through, like you said. You read the road, yeah. and you get it, and you're fine. But when yeah. you try to compare it to the modern, which is what I started out on, yeah. that's where you're going to lose ship. Because if you didn't read these three books to read between the lines to get what they were trying to tether in, you're going to lose it. But if you read the road book,
right.
it's right there.
Right. And you know, I know we've talked to... you know, we talked to Matt Dawkins and a lot of people, they're like, well, you know, these books that deal with the paths, books that deal with the clans, they don't sell well. They're not, you know, they're not like real big, you know, for people to pick up. I don't get that. Like, to me, these are my favorite type of books because yep. I find the information in here infinitely applicable both as a player and as a storyteller. And, you know, going through here, I certainly was like, man, it would be awesome if they'd had path books for modern day and not just these road books for Dark Ages.
There's a truth that when they wrote certain books, it was love from the writer,
mm-hmm.
writing about what they felt, they understood, knew, and enjoyed doing, and of the vampire image that they were taking and made a perspective to be shared,
mm-hmm.
right? However, there are people who just write to sell.
Yeah.
And you and I know sales very, very, very well.
Yeah.
All selling is taking something that the person already knows what it does, right?
Right.
And telling them why it's even better and why they should get this specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's a manipulation unto its own right. And when you write only to sell, here's a tip. Writers, editors, people who own companies, put a vagina on it. All right? What am I saying? I'm only saying this from the Zemisi book perspective. I'm not trying to objectify anything. But it's uncontested. The most popular clan book they did had a black slip adults only cover on it and sat on a shelf in game stores. Everybody had to have it, and it was hard to keep it on the shelf.
Right.
Well, why? Right? And we knew why. In that era, that could fly. You can't do that again.
No, no.
Right? So what you got to do is get back to what we're talking about here and sort of like, honestly, it's a lot like what Road of the Beast talks about. Right? One of my favorite things about it, get rid of all the bullshit.
Yeah.
You're not your home, you're not your castle, you're not, you know, anything but this beast. And they like to go on sojourns, for instance.
Right.
One of my favorite parts of this book is when they tell the adherent, listen, go for a run and don't come back for a full night. What? Run nonstop, do not stop to feed, do not stop to grab anything, and go. And come back to us just before dawn. Right. And without question, he takes off. Right? And as he's running, he's talking about how he's letting his beast kind of guide him in his senses. And where to go and how to run. It's under the moonlight. And he's getting hungry because he's burning through blood because he's not just running. He's letting the beast leap farther and climb faster. And maybe he challenges and runs full tilt at a bear just to touch it. And the bear swings and hits him. You know, a little enhanced stamina as he does it if you need the mechanic thrown in. And he's doing all these cool things in this run, just loving being a vampire and letting it happen. But since he's letting his beast kind of do the driving, he comes back to him like he was supposed to. And he's not in control.
Right.
Not 100%. And what they did was when he comes back, there's this pile of leaves, and they want him to find what's in it and what's not in it, and he battles himself. He has to literally battle his beast to get back control to understand what they want him to do. And I said to myself right there, I fucking feel that Road of the Beast is not only necessary mm-hmm. as a read, but almost change the book completely and include it so people can understand what's in them.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. What is in you that you are role-playing? Because it certainly isn't Humanitas.
Well, yeah, and the thing about that story too, what makes that such a good story, I won't give the ending away, but I feel like the author does an exceptional job of showing you the difference between the logic of the human mind and the instinct of the beast. And I think like in that, I was like, oh my God, that's so illuminating. You know, as someone who's been playing this for a long time, I pretty much got it down pat. But I was like, for a new player or for somebody going, I don't really understand, like, what is the mistake that I would make? Here it is. It's right there. And I was like, that's so good. That's such a good example. And, well, I'll say this. The first two chapters, I really enjoy both of the stories. I do feel there is a little bit of redundancy. And normally that would kind of annoy me. But I feel like this is made specifically for players who go, I really want to get into this road, but I don't understand how it works. And it does a great job of redoubling on certain key aspects so that players get that aha moment. They go, oh, I get it. This is how this is portrayed. And also,
what's some of the redundancy you're seeing?
No, just like things that are restated. You know, some of the development of the road, you know, getting onto it. It's just there is some doubling up because the first two stories are stories either written or told by characters, you know, read through like a journal, right? So there's some consistency because it's two different people that are on the same road telling these stories. And so in that regard, I might normally go, it's a little annoying. But it's really not in this case. It's just more to show you these two characters who are on the same road with a slightly different perspective. You know, one of them being that Tremere that we talked about, and the other one being that Bruja.
Rodrigo.
Yeah, Rodrigo. And his perspective. And I like that neither of them are like snarling, one-dimensional characters. That's what I love about it. That there's both three-dimensional characterization that you can tell they both have desires, they both have urges, they're both writing the information for a reason. It's very separate. And that's what I love.
And the cool thing about that is that when you talk about the same incident that they're kind of giving perspectives on, they give you the, I can never remember his name, just the Tremere. I think it might be Gerard, actually. It is Gerard.
Mm-hmm.
Gerard is somebody who was a soldier embracing the Tremere to defend them. And was used to travel the wilds during the Omen War, because that was the issue, to figure out all sorts of stuff for the Tremere. And he originally started studying the beasts, the ferals, if you will, because he felt they had a power over themselves that the Tremere could tap into and figure out.
Right.
Very dangerous, because when he meets Viola, Viola, as I'm going to call her.
I call her Loyola. I don't know.
Loyola, is that what it is?
It's L-I-O-L-Y-A, Loyola.
Yes, Loyola. My brain just had that backwards. So when he meets Loyola, she's very motherly about mm-hmm. him. Very much like instantly knew off the bat that this was someone who would adapt well.
Right.
And it talks about how it takes, he journeys with her. It takes months, years, is what it seems like, of them traveling together for him to get down what it is he's seeing. And she doesn't just, hey, let me tell you about it and whatever. She told him, if you're going to go and see what we're about, then you're going to be what we're about. And he had to make a choice.
Right.
And so in his own writing, he kisses it goodbye. And then he's very much going on what a lot of players would love. Right. Here we are going to the slow mode, seeing what it is and seeing the steps and what it's about, meeting these other NPCs who are further along on the path, like Grandfather. Right. And Grandfather plays a pivotal role in this book when you read about him. But he looks like an old man, yet he's not. Right. Duh. He's mm-hmm. a vampire. And right. Who knows? You assume Gangrel. And that's what it is. But yet he's a Tremere and he can be feral. How's that possible? Well, then the book flips and talks about Rodrigo. And Rodrigo is someone who's already done been on this path and been here a while.
Right.
And Rodrigo is going through kicking in doors and murdering people. Well, why is he doing it? It's a city. He told some guy he wanted a book. The guy didn't give an immediate answer. And it's, this is somebody he liked. And he's torturing this guy. And he says, listen, you need to tell me all that you know. And because you know what happens if you don't.
Right.
And then the guy's like, oh, well, you know, I told you everything and everything and blah, 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 blah. And Rodrigo goes, so I'll admit. And he's calming down as he's, you know, his beast is all right all of a sudden. And he's like, well, you've done all that you could to the limit of what you can, you could. And now I understand your strength. And then Rodrigo kills him. And to a lot of people, wait a minute, if you understood why he did it, well, it's because rule number one of the beast, there is no mercy.
Right.
And there is no excuse. You are the strong or you are not. And you would know your own limitation. The moment you, the weaker, decide to take on someone the stronger, it is their duty to destroy you. Because you are trying to upset this balance. They believe that the simple rule of strong and weak and which side you're on is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And walking that road is to become stronger. Now, it doesn't mean that there is no one stronger than you. Right? Right. In another word, predator, prey. Right? If you would be a predator, then you know the rules of not stalking stronger predators. They will have a larger territory. Let them have their territory. But in return, they will always allot something for others to fight over.
Right.
Because well, also being a road of beasts is balance.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The other thing that I like about this, in the telling of these stories through the journals, it does sort of follow that backdrop of I guess it's probably something that people don't really talk about or think about that much, but the war that the Gangrel and really by default, not even the Gangrel, but the Ferals, because most don't really notice a difference against the Tremere and against sort of those forces who see the Ferals as being a disruptive force in their domains and their, you know, in their areas of influence. And I really find that interesting.
The interesting part about it is because the Ferals say that you're a vampire, you're dead. Why are you trying to be human?
Right.
That's what they're saying. And it's in a time where they can operate the way they do. And they're smelling their own extinction.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because even within the Road of the Beast, there are those who know, well, the city's just another wild.
Yep.
And we can exist in there and do whatever it is we do and move on. It's just we are never going to be weak in a city. Because this is the weak congregate in a city because they cannot handle the wild.
Right.
That is their belief. They're not incorrect. Anyone listening knows it's a hardier way of living and a hardier people that live without the comforts of your central AC, your electricity, your running water, right? There's just going to be a tougher brand of people who live without those things by nature of survival. Now, because of that, the Ferals go, well, the people in the wild should come and take from these people. But what they don't get is that we're also smart, right? Right? There's an intellect here that goes with it, but they even say, the moment that you give up in your so-called intelligence versus cunning and you don't understand the difference, that's why we throat you.
Right.
What good is your intelligence if we can come in and take your life?
Right.
However, if you were cunning, you would understand that that's a possibility, and then you would understand us. And thus, you would work to be strong so we couldn't take from you. And the Ferals are correct. That's exactly what happened. Right? That's what is happening. These cities smarten up. The princes keep more and more territory. They invite more and more people to sit with them to build a veritable army against what they would do. And because they talk about in here a story of how they gave someone the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that? There was someone came and took over a series of caves that had some ancient writing in it.
Yeah.
That was done by Ferals. And the guy didn't know. The Venture Lord took over the land. He didn't know about the caves, but it was on his land.
Right.
And so the Ferals go and they steal his child.
Right.
And then they sent a messenger and said, listen, you get to choose. We'll give you your chilled back, but it's going to cost you the caves, the land on it for a score
right.
of miles. And then you will get your chilled back whole and alive. And Venture Lord's like, no, give me back my children. Right. You're dead.
Right.
So they took various animals in successive nights, night after night after night, right. bringing a part of his chilled to him.
Right.
Right. And just dropping it off to the child was no more. And right. it wouldn't have mattered. And he said it wouldn't have mattered if he said, oh, no, have your land. Now you're serious. No, they still would have killed him. But what happened is, as the pieces were going to him, the Ventrues, because this is really what was going on, the Ferals are forcing him to hold back his frenzy to resist the beast, which this book tells you is the number one weakness.
Right.
When you treat the beast as separate from you, and it is something to contain, otherwise you lose it, well, then you're correct. You're the prophet of your own destruction.
Right.
Because your beast is telling you to get out there and seek reprisal and vengeance and save your child and take what's yours and defend your territory, and you're not doing that, this Ventru eventually frenzies.
Yeah.
And when he does, he tears off into the woods, and when he does that, they hunt him down and kill him.
Right.
And then a new chick comes in, and she's like, hey, Ferals, you're cool with me. Can I be here? And they said, absolutely, because those caves are ours. You have full access. I'll never go there. I'll throw something else in. Enjoy feeding. Can you keep the killing out to the caves, though? This is fair.
What's funny is I was reading through this book, and on page 32 is a picture of this scene, and it's this guy and a bunch of animals, like, holding body parts. And I'm like, what is this a picture of? I don't get it. And then I read a little deeper, and I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. It's like, okay, yes, that's exactly what they're describing.
It's like, oh, hey, is that wolf holding a leg?
Right. Is that somebody's... Wait, how does that guy have three hands? Oh, he doesn't. That's his chilled hand. Okay, I get it.
Loves him to pieces, he did.
Well, and it's an interesting thing that you bring up, the caves, because they do go into the fact that there are holy sites for the ferals. And they go into a bunch of them and describe them at, you know, at decent length. And that's kind of like one of the things that I really like about this book is stuff like that. These are things that I want in a modern day book about a path of enlightenment. You know, where are the holy sites? Where, you know, what are some of the differences? Speaking of cool pictures that I really like, when you get to page 56, and there's the feral like chewing up the map. I was like, that reminds me of so many games I've been in. He's tearing the map to bits and just looks like insane. I just thought that was very funny. But the fact that they do give you such good, solid, plainly written advice in this chapter for how to play, you know, this path, this road. And how to, you know, how to go about your character creation, just like all the things to focus on. To me, this is such a valuable resource for players.
That's all that needs to be said about that. I mean, it is.
Mm-hmm. one thing I am a little sad about, and you might disagree with me, but I feel like the paths, you know, Path of the Hunter, Path of the Nomad, Path of the Grey Hunter, I felt like those were a tiny bit underdeveloped.
I do disagree, because you got to understand that this isn't about, when you look at the road, they're not trying to give you complete full-on paths like you're used to seeing. And in fact, it's abbreviated for a reason. The road is all of these paths combined,
mm-hmm.
right? The philosophy unto itself is Road of the Beast. Whether you're Grey Hunter, just on the Path of Hunter itself, mm-hmm. Nomad, whatever, it's all still one road.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many paths that branch off from the road. And that's why there's a distinction between road and path, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to rock my road the same way or even come to it the same way. Right. And that is the philosophy behind it. What path did you take to reach me, my child? And you know what road we walk, right? Look at it that way.
Yeah.
And in this, you could say, I am a nomad. I do not feel I have to be bound into civilization, which would enslave us. I am to be free and I am wild. And I will always remain under the sky. Mm-hmm. And I will always be one who seeks to be running the land versus to building and stagnant and dying slowly on the land.
Sure.
Yes, this is good, my child. We do walk the same road. And that's a high ritualistic way to talk about it. But damn it, that's the point.
Right.
That's how you get it. But we still serve the same interests in that regard. But I clearly know where you stand by the path you have chosen.
No, I definitely agree with you. I just, you know, wish I had seen a little bit more to him, but that's all.
But that's important.
Right.
Like, what were you looking for? That's what folks want to hear.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, I just wish, like, they talk about these paths throughout the book and they're very interesting, but you know, you are right. They are just the path. They are just the road of the beast. I guess I wanted more words. I don't know. I don't know how to describe it, but I wanted to know a little bit more of them individually. But like I said, it's not like I'm really trying to go in on it. But I just felt like they could have spent a couple of pages describing more about these paths and how they developed and, you know, but that's it. I mean, they're not really, what you're saying is not wrong.
What I'm trying to help you with,
mm-hmm.
I think it's because you're forgetting a point that I'm still retaining.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, they showed you how to piecemeal together your own path?
Yeah, of course they did. Yeah.
That's why it's this way. It fits into that mechanic. It says, if you take the Road of the Beast the way it's written, and then put in the ethics, the additional ethics that are needed to follow it, then you still have the same path.
Yeah. No, you're...
with the same hierarchy sense to guide you.
I just wanted more fluff. I didn't necessarily want more mechanics. Like honestly, that's...
They
that's
weren't it. Done. Now I understand. Right. I understand. They were not done, and you liked what they had. Okay.
Right, right. That's all I'm saying is that I like what they presented. I wish they had presented a little bit more fluff. But, like, the actual, like, the stats, the game mechanics, they're all there. So it's not like you need anything in that regard. And it's like you said, they're not, it's not distinctly divergent from the road itself. It's just slightly altered. It's just a little bit different.
And that little bit means a lot. I mean, it's, the little things do, it's something I learned perhaps later in life. Little things matter to a lot of people because those details are what people retain. The great big events we leave to memory and time.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we hope we were calm, credit, but everybody will remember when you didn't get up to get him a drink when they went to get it, right? Just to be pedantic there. But that's the sort of mentality. And here they kind of take advantage of that and say, okay, we'll keep it small, right? Because if you look here, they give you 3 points. No more than three.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason for that.
Right.
You learn it in speech. You learn it in anything. You literally give only 3 points, hammer home strength, the point, and the ability to retain the knowledge given. Any more than that, it gets too complex. Any less than that, and it doesn't seem serious enough. The magic number is three.
Yeah.
The rule of three.
The other side note here that other people may or may not give a rat's ass about, but this is a book that's written after the revised edition Laws of the Night came out because it does have LARP rules with the disciplines and merits and flaws. Just like a clan book, at the end of this book, they have a bunch of... you know, example characters, and then they have the like NPC characters that they talk about throughout the story and some other important ones. It's pretty straightforward stuff.
Can you help me with something though? Mm-hmm. I didn't look it up and I didn't on purpose because you might know. Mm-hmm. I felt this is something everybody knew what it was and I'm the only one who missed it. And I kind of enjoy learning that way. What the hell's a turt?
A what?
If you look on page 75, it says artifacts, turts.
Page 75, that says texts.
Is it?
Yeah, I think that it's a typo, but I had the same problem too. If you look at page 76, it's there as well.
Yeah.
Under turts and tails.
Right. I said, I don't know what they're talking about. I ignored it. Just kept reading. I was like, maybe I fundamentally didn't think. I was like, I sat here and this is what went through my head, bro. No lie. I was like, artifact turts? What the hell is that? And I kept reading and I was like, the following selection of artifacts and text. Why not just call it text?
I
is there
going to
be a fancy word for text? And why would it be
text,
called turt?
But it just...
No, it is text. Stylistic writing.
Yeah.
When type font, that'll throw me every time.
Yeah.
It's so, my bad.
No, that's okay. It's funny because I did the exact same thing. I was like... What the hell is... I actually thought it said I-E-R-T-S. I was like, what is IERTS?
We're making up words. Yeah, it's so good.
Making stuff up. Yeah. So, all right. Let's wrap it up. I mean, at the end of the book here, it's got everything that a normal one of these books has. Those characters, the NPCs that you can use in your game. It's pretty straightforward for a White Wolf book in that regard. But any, like, final thoughts? Any last words to make about this book?
What I would say is that if you're looking to play Savage and you want to get into a connection of what that is and what is going on, there's a ton of content into what that is. It's a difference between, well, like we talked about it, Canebro. Canebro is only a Canebro from an outsider's perspective. Everybody who's built a character had something in mind of what they wanted to accomplish. 90% of Canebros don't, though. However, how a storyteller combats them, I've said it before, I'll say it again, ask them, what are you trying to do with this character? Let me help you get there.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking to do?
Yeah,
and then sit them down because now you're forcing them to do that part they skipped and you didn't tell them, no, you can't play it with the stat you have. You said, give me a story and I'll tell your tale and we'll see where it goes. But if you don't give me a story, you're fundamentally saying don't approve this character because it's just here to ruin the fun of everyone else.
Right.
And by everyone else, you.
Right.
First and foremost, because you're just asking for trouble. However, read this book, all Canebros, read Road of the Beast and you're going to learn something. Man, that beast is so important, and it's in every vampire. That means any vampire is a killer. anyone has the instincts to be what this is talking about. And because of it, there's a danger. And there are a lot of different philosophies to kind of rein that killer impulse in, or different ways to portray it.
Right.
And once your mind goes different ways to portray it, this book begins to hunt it down. Like, one of the things Nate didn't mention, maybe just forgot to, but it's one of my favorite things in this book. They have a template for a thing called a Diablerist.
Yeah.
It's a template, and you're wondering, well, no doubt, run around, Diablerize, and that's it. Read the template.
Yeah. And also read in this book what they think about Diablerists in this path, or in this road, rather.
And it's something that'll change. It'll change your mind. It'll open up to, well, wow, okay. Not just anybody should be running around to Diablerize and what. Have a purpose. Hell, it'll teach you how to write purpose into your game, bro, to be playable and thus excusable.
Right.
So when people go to point out to you, oh, it's just bad roleplay. No. If you hit the background, you're role playing it correctly. They can see that. They won't get there.
Right.
And you still get to play what you're looking for, but you're gonna find. Might be a little boring only going that far, and this book lets you deep dive to enhance more and grow more.
Yeah, I've always felt that the major difference between a cane bro and a good character is just a well-developed background story. If you just go, here's my potence and here's my celerity, let me play. Yeah, I'm going to be like, okay, cane bro. But if you're like, here's my potence and my celerity, and here's the story why it happened and it's good, I'm going to be like, oh. This makes sense. This is not a cane bro. This is a struggling individual who's had to live by his wits. All right, I get it. You know, that's just, to me, this book is clearly written for players, but I feel like every storyteller who's running a Dark Ages or a modern game and going to introduce paths or going to introduce roads should definitely read this book. It was a quick read. It was easily digestible. It was entertaining writing, and I just really, truly enjoyed it. So I think everybody should get a copy of this if you don't have it. I think it would be great. And, you know, I'm not fully in that everybody has to read the Dark Ages roads to understand the modern day paths, but it certainly doesn't hurt. So there you go.
I think you said it all, my man. I agree with everything you said right there. It's honestly not as rare as we've reviewed, but in all that we reviewed lately, there was a bad run. I'll admit that, where we just fundamentally stuff didn't stick. Again, this is a book that impresses, and this is more than a collection. You need this just to play this game, in my opinion, to truly play it and enjoy it.
Yeah. All right. So next week we are doing the review of Dark Ages Inquisitor. So we got a pretty solid, chunky book to read, and I'm very excited and interested to read it.
It's not chunky. Just big boned.
it's a solid rule book type book. But having read through it, the reason why we're going to review it, it's right up front in the beginning of the book. It says, in order to play this game, you need to have a Dark Ages vampire book. So it is inherently tied to Dark Ages vampire. So that's why it's getting a review. Alternatively, we are not going to be reviewing Dark Ages Werewolf, Dark Ages Mage, Dark Ages Fae until we get to those game lines, because they're dependent on those particular books and not this one. So, that's it. If you guys have any questions, any silly or pertinent questions you want answered, make sure you hit us up on Discord, Facebook, utilitymuffinlabs.com, email, Patreon, all that. Thank you, Bob, as always.
It's always a privilege, sir. Thank you.
And until next week, I am Nathan.
And I'm Bob.
And there's some redundancy for you. Have a good one. Take it easy, folks. Thank you for listening to 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. If you like our podcast and you'd like to help support our show, consider backing us at patreon.com/25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. We offer reward tiers of additional Patreon-only podcasts, t-shirts, and personalized gaming experiences. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and go to our website, utilitymuffinlabs.com, for links to all of our social media, additional podcasts, and more. If you'd like to chat with us, submit a title for review, promote your gaming-related stuff, or anything else you can think of, email me at nathan@utilitymuffinlabs.com. Utility Muffin Labs, consistently rated adequate.